Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Sulfur-Blatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, Susan Laurie Parks is here to talk about her first novel, Getting Mother's Body, which has just come into paperback from Random House. Is it, in fact, your first novel? Or just
it is. Well, it's my first published novel, let's say that. Yeah, I think I was writing a novel when I was in fourth grade, but that hasn't come out. That won't come out.
Tell me, where were you born?
I was born in Fort Knox, Kentucky. Yeah, my father was in the Army. And I was born, and shortly after I was born in Fort Knox, Kentucky, in 1963, we moved. We're a traveling family, my family, so we got on the road shortly after I was born and drove to North Carolina, started living there. So,
because this book has a real on-the-road quality that seems to capture voices from place to place. Is its model Faulkner?
Its model is Faulkner, and its model is also, like I said, you know, my family is a traveling family. I have a deep respect for Mr. Faulkner and As I Lay Dying. I also have a lot of traveling in my family, and from the very first play I ever wrote, digging up bodies. So a long time ago when I read As I Lay Dying, I immediately realized that The Reverse was a story that I had been telling for a long time about groups of people who would go and dig up people, resurrectionists and grave diggers and,
When I saw the chapter titles, I thought, uh-oh, As I Lay Dying, which is a great book, but really murderously difficult to read, to get used to, to come to grips with. This is a magnificent comic novel, and it doesn't provoke that kind of difficulty. And I wanted to ask you about that, because it's such a different tone from the work that seems to be its guardian.
Oh, sure. Well, it is giving a deeper and reverent bow to the guardian, and then it kind of goes on its merry way. It has its own flavor. It's totally its own characters. It's got songs in it. It's and again, they're traveling to dig up somebody, which I think is a novel about, you know, the resurrection of the mother instead of the placing of the mother into the ground. So the tone is, and it's a treasure hunt novel. It's a treasure hunt road trip family novel.
What I like the most really is that in the very first sections of the book, we're told the two major aspects of the quest are not to be found. We're told that Billy Beads' fiancé is not going to be there when she arrives for the marriage. Mm-mm. And that's section one of the book, arriving. Mm-mm. And she leaves fairly easily. She comes into the yard. She sees the man's wife, and she sets fire to the wedding gown that she's bought. We're also told that this effort to restore the family to some sort of financial stability, the jewels and diamonds that have been buried with mother's body, we're told that they're not there, that they were already stolen before the coffin went into the earth.
Right.
So part of the fun of this book is watching people scramble for things that they can't have, that we know they can't have.
Sound perverse. It's kind of, it's,
In that way, the kind of anti-novel thing where we know that there's no gold at the end of the rainbow.
Right.
What are they going to do? What does that mean for a writer to be working from the beginning with the idea that the inevitable reward isn't there?
It was a great challenge for me, because what happened when I wrote this in Voices, I had to be completely honest, and when a character would give me a piece of information, I had to turn over the card. You know, so when Billy's boyfriend, the man who has made her with child or impregnated her, I guess, says, says more or less, I ain't going to marry this chick. I had to tell that right away. And then watch her still go after him, knowing that she wasn't going to get him. And when Dil Smiles, Willa May's former lover, Dil Smiles is a woman, has her hand in her pocket, Dil has her hand in her pocket and is fiddling with the ring, one of Willa May's jewels that she stole from the coffin. I had to tell that right away. So I was totally with the characters. Instead of being sort of, you know, author omniscient, you know, I know everything, I'm sort of standing back and watching them, I was so much in the pickup truck with them. I was one of the members of the family, not really knowing what was going to happen. And so certainly the first time I wrote it all the way through and found out that there was something to be found when they dug up the mother, I was overjoyed. I didn't know. I couldn't see it coming. I didn't know. You know, I was really sitting right next to Billy, wanting, and doubting. So I was right in there with him. And it made writing it all, it was just an incredible experience to round that corner and see something there, you know.
You've been doing screenplays based on the work of Toni Morrison and of
Zora
Neale Hurston.
Yes.
And I sensed that analysis of what a novel is and how to turn it into unbroken dramatic action has a lot to do with being able to write a novel here.
Mm-hmm.
In this book, Getting Mother's Body, by my guest Susan Laurie Parks, published by Random House in paperback recently, humor seems to be the safety net.
Mm.
Because what the book is in fact about is much more dangerous than the kinds of humor that the characters are capable of as they speak. And this seems to be certainly a technique in Top Dog Underdog, that the underlying sadness is what the humor reveals, and that the real subject of the piece is underneath its surface.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Gee, I wish I could. Your questions are they go right into the center of your third eye, and then you go, whoa, oh no, I'm completely unmasked. No, but it's true. In Getting Mother's Body, these people, it's 1963, these are people who don't have a lot of money. They're between a rock and a hard place. They want to better their lives. They go on this dicey treasure hunt across state lines. These days it's dangerous to travel. Back in 1963, especially if you were an African-American family, from my own experience, it was dangerous to travel. It was really dangerous. When the character Roosevelt Bede talks about that he doesn't want Billy going on the road by herself, it was not a, you know, not a picnic. To get in a car and to just go for a ride for a distance. So there's a lot of tension, there's a lot of fear, a lot of desire for a better life. And I have not answered your question. I don't. All I know is that the laughter, the humor in the book comes out of, it's like fill your mouth with dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And you laugh. Somehow the laughter allows you to take the next breath, you know? So you know how these days everyone's walking around going, if you're stressed, breathe. You know what I mean? Like, people have that vocabulary. Well, back then, we didn't have that vocabulary. You know, I don't think anybody quite had that vocabulary. But if things got difficult enough, a laugh would allow you a breath, grabs the air and sucks it inside and allows you to advance just to the next moment where you might be able to think or feel and get through, you know.
Because what I heard, you know, maybe in terms of the form, Faulkner was, you know, there. Mm-hmm. But what I heard very much was Flannery O'Connor.
She's a funny woman, isn't she?
yeah, exactly. And
that
when there's, you know, we've got a man who manufactures carves custom coffins.
Yeah.
The subject really is death, but he's offering a banana-shaped coffin.
Well, sure.
Or the coffin in the shape of a doctor's satchel.
Sure.
But again and again, every time under the surface, even the woman, Myrna, who's on the bus, she knows, let me give you the name of an abortionist, you're in trouble, that over and over again, the subject is death.
Mm-hmm.
And the broader strokes are avoiding that.
Yeah, it's, you know, someone asked me once if I thought a lot about the American dream, you know, and my interest, you know, the church is, you know, I'm, you know, raised a Catholic and all that, interested in church, but my interest is really America and Americans and the American dream without the, it's like the fine print of the American dream.
But what do you work from? Do you work from images?
Images. I think I work from characters because I'm working on the next. I'm working on, you know, I'm doing the screenplays, but I'm also starting to write the new novel and starting to write a new play. And I think of a character, or I'm kind of moving through the day, and I can feel a character. That gesture is mine, but it is also the gesture of so-and-so, a character in the book, you know? So I'll write a little note down and put it and stick it to my wall, you know? So I have a collection of little stickums, you know, on the wall with little notes on them. This guy would do this. This woman is about this. This woman listens to the radio. This woman sings the songs, you know? So it's really from character, because the plays and the novel and the screenplays, even, they start, you know, kind of in my guts. It's this real gut. It's a very uncomfortable thing. I don't know. You talk to a lot of writers. I'd love to, you know, hear what other writers have to say, because for me, it's like, I feel like, you know, the story is kind of coiled, you know, around, you know, my insides. And if I don't write it, it will just kill me, you know. So I wonder if other, you know, it's just like, you got to write it or you're dead, you know, kind of thing.
Because I'm interested, a writer I like a lot, Marie Irene Fornes, a playwright.
Oh, she's great.
She's wonderful.
She's amazing.
She said that in her early plays, she literally would make a deck of characters, and she'd lay out three, and those would be the characters in the scene, and she'd see what they'd say to one another, and if they said interesting things, she kept the scene.
Huh.
If not, she reshuffled the deck and laid out another three.
Oh, cool.
And that there was something solitaire-like about playing out the possibilities.
Wow.
So I'm always interested if people have a way that they go about to keep the life going. You've got the character, but now how do you put him into the world of action? What happens next?
Yeah, I just follow along with them. And sometimes, especially the people in Getty Mother's Body. I mean, the guys in Top Dog were very forthcoming, almost embarrassingly so. but these people in Getty Mother's Body, I tell people, it was like, you know, driving down the main street, you know, of a small town, a small black town. Why? Because you drive down the street and you go, this is me. Hi, I hear Dill Smiles lives here. I'd really like to talk with her. That's me. And the people go. They don't say anything. So then you kind of drive through town. You drive around again. You come back through. Hey, anybody know Dill Smiles? I don't know. Dill Smiles? You know Dill Smiles? I don't know. That went on for years. I mean, with every single character, not every single character, but pretty much, no one said anything. They were, you know, so you just kind of have to drive around and around and around. And then, whoa, you get, you know, someone like will point out where Dill lives. And then you go there and you sit in, you know, on her porch or whatever. It's just a lot of sitting and waiting and knowing, trusting your gut, and because you got to know when they're not, when they're talking at you, instead of talking to you or talking with you. You know, these characters, they were talking at me. You know, they would, they would not trust. They would wait. They, who are you? To, all this stuff. And that, they, so they wait, you know, they really wait. It's happened to me for years, though. A lot of my characters, like, you know, in the America play, the first Lincoln impersonator that I ran into, or the Venus, the Hottentot Venus, or the characters in The Death of the Last Black Man in the Whole Entire World, they will come to your, they will sit there, but you have to prove yourself. It's like a, you know, you have to prove yourself as a writer.
How do you prove yourself? By getting it right?
No, not by getting it. Who knows if I get it right? By just sticking it out. You prove yourself by sticking it out. I think once they realized that I was just going to keep, you know, driving through that town, and maybe not drive. Maybe I'd walk through the town. And that girl's here. She here again, man. She's walking up and down the street. I don't know. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And, you know, she doesn't seem like she has any, you know, she doesn't want to burn the town down. Actually, she wants to just talk to us, you know? So you just have to stick it out. With my characters, they've been quiet for so long.
Well, one of the things that I particularly like, having seen Top Dog, Underdog mm-hmm. recently, and having read Getting Mother's Body by my guest Susan Laurie Parks, is that although these characters have secrets,
mm-hmm.
I like the fact that they reveal them almost immediately. They may have been taught by a culture mm-hmm. to keep their mouth shut mm-hmm. and to stay obdurate,
mm-hmm.
but in these pieces, mm-hmm. both theatrically and in mm-hmm. prose, that old rule, use these things as climaxes, work up to them, reveal it slowly, is immediately violated.
Yeah.
We're getting characters who we know from their outside wouldn't mm-hmm. be telling us these things,
right.
who say them immediately from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what makes us kind of sit up and say, well, if she's telling us that on the first page, where is this going to go now? This
yeah.
is like a complete violation of the old withhold, and make it the, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shoot. You know, see, I don't have an MFA. I didn't get a degree in writing. I guess I missed that part. You know, it's interesting to me. You know, I feel like wide open. You know, start, you know, wide open. Right when you know something, tell it. And then it's exciting. Then where does a character have to go? Let's see. If I don't keep that ace in the hole, you know, that ace in my pocket, if I play it, where do I have to go? Then you move into, the undiscovered country. And that's when it gets exciting for a writer.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's when it gets really exciting, because that's when you get in the truck with them. You're traveling with them. You don't know where you're going, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, this is fascinating to me, because I think of your characters as being near autistic with depression, given what they've experienced. And the situations you put them into make them immediately, you give them whatever it is. The characters in Top Dog, Underdog have their jive.
Right.
And it communicates what they can't.
Right.
They're, you know, like practically dancing and singing their inner story.
Right.
While in fact, this character,
mm-hmm.
you know, who's been arrested a bunch of times, he's a street cheat, mm-hmm. he would be playing it really cagey.
Mm-hmm.
But you find mm-hmm. this incredible mm-hmm. method to mm-hmm. tap right into the character and not make us wait for that old-fashioned kind of,
the
drama.
God. No.
Mom came to me in the middle of the night with a gun. You know. No, that's on page one. What do you do with that fact? That's what seems to me to be so new.
It's so cool, man. I mean, no one's ever said that. I think we're, you know, this is more about my psychological state than I think I'm comfortable with. I know that in the African American community, there's a joke, you know, one wrong step can set the race back 20 years. You know, you've heard that, you know, and I'm sure in other groups, you know, you, folks say the same thing, you know, where one in the group stands for 1,000. Remember, like, Willie Horton, you know, all of a sudden, all black men, you know, oh, no, they're all, or this person or that person, or when one does well, you know, a Susan Laurie Parks or somebody, oh, look, or Halle Berry, oh, look, now we're all, you know, that kind of thing. So we have this weird sort of, these weird sort of rules. One does well, we're all good. One does poorly, ooh, we're all bad, you know. So there's one of the rules is, you know, don't show dirty laundry. You know, I think speaking of Alice Walker, I remember when The Color Purple came out, and certainly when the movie came out, there's so much flack about she's showing dirty laundry, she's showing our drawers, and you know, when I mean I don't know Miss Walker, but I think she was telling a story, you know, and I think you tell the story, the good and the bad. Because these are people, and our steps forward depend on showing what we have to show, good and bad.
So. Well, you know what I learned recently? Yeah. I get invited to writing programs a lot, and often as not, these writing programs involve local groups like Point Day and Latino writers gay writers or addicted writers. Or almost the first thing you're told is, in my community, the rule is be ashamed. And I noticed, in fact, I said it, you know, in front of a group of kids. I said, you know, wherever I go, everyone says rule number one is be ashamed. And everyone has brought into the world this idea that they have, as an ethnic group, the great big lock on the feeling of shame. When, in fact,
it's everywhere.
You know, everywhere. And it's the first thing, and it's the block against writing, first of all.
Right.
And why is it a block against writing? Because it's a block against being specific.
Oh, okay.
If you keep it shut down, you can just talk about yourself without saying any facts.
Right.
You know, and so I did find it interesting that in these things, the technique for perfectly is break it open. Let's take this bit and see if this is a geode. Is there minerals inside? That your whole technique is to begin with the character completely open. But if you were to compare your method, for instance, with Toni Morrison's In Paradise, there you've got a book that begins, and you have to read the book twice. This is a decision, a conscious decision on your part to begin out in the open with the sun pouring down spotlit on a person who's just letting it all out. How do you get the ability to do that? Where did that come from?
I think it really comes from that's really the only way to tell the story for me. It's the only way to tell the story. My characters are, when they finally trust you, When you really have hit the story. The story is about a young woman who has had whose mother has had sex with lots of people and failed relationships and failed marriages, and who now, as the novel opens, is having sex with a married man, and she's a girl in trouble who don't know where her panties are. That's what the novel's about. Where are my panties at? That's it. And I have to go and find my mother's body, and while I don't find my panties, you know, I find a lot of other stuff.
Because I thought that's what they do. That's why the mother sings throughout the book. She's singing her own version of the blues, and the blues is telling you exactly where she is and who's betrayed her and who she's betrayed and why she's down and out. And these characters are a generation later, and they're viewing their lives as being as open as the blues song. And I think that music is why you have access to the characters, because while you're waiting for them to talk, they don't seem to have trouble singing.
So,
like on your stages and in the pages of this book, it's sort of like they can't tell you who they are, but they can do stand-up comedy. They can't confess, but they can sing.
And I
think that is the secret, in a way, to why these things blast open from the word go.
Because it's not a the little secret isn't the subject of the. I mean, I've seen plays and I've read novels where you read along and it's really this little shrouded thing, you know. And I'm not being really articulate. I've really never thought about why I do that.
Well, but it's fascinating to me that you get rid of the reveal.
Right.
You know, and if
right.
if I were yeah. someone, if I were a critic or something yeah. like that, and I wanted to say what characterized Suzanne Laurie Parks, mm-hmm. I'd want to say that where most people end, she begins,
mm-hmm.
that the final number that mm-hmm. would celebrate the finding of that truth mm-hmm. is the opening number,
right.
and that the books and plays mount from there, and they really are about rejecting the idea of getting to the heart of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
They begin with the loudness and say, okay, mm-hmm. the heart of the matter comes when the person can unite who he is mm-hmm. with his song.
It's very well said. That's really great. Yeah, I mean, it's also a view standing on Earth looking out into the cosmos. Do you know what I mean? Instead of mm-hmm. looking, you know, mm-hmm. Earth is the center, you know. No, actually, these people are standing on Earth saying, we start here and we are part of that enormity. And even when, you know, June, when Aunt June and Billy are sleeping in the back of the truck because the men have been put in jail for the night, and Aunt June looks up into the stars and remembers that her father taught her, you know, what if the names of a few of them, and she's looking at Billy who's, you know, with this baby inside, and just the two women in the truck are like constellations in the sky, and you know, matching, you know, part mm-hmm. of that constellation that
wow.
starts up in, you know, that starts on Earth and travels up into the sky, and
take the small and make it bigger.
Right. That's right. Instead of let's hunt for the small thing.
Uh-huh.
Take the small. We are the small. We think we're the big. We're the tiny. Yeah, we are the small thing, and
let's make it enormous.
Yeah, or let's at least listen to it and realize that, ooh, it's big, you know. I think that's important for I guess, you know, all kinds of writers coming from specific groups, because we think, you know, our story only has to do with our people, but actually, when you do it that way, then you realize, oh, this story is the story of everyone's family, you know.
I've been talking with Susan Laurie Parks about her novel Getting Mother's Body. It's recently come out in paperback from Random House. Thank you, Susan Laurie, for coming
Thank
here.
Thank you so much, Michael.
This
was a blast.
Enjoyed it.
Thank
yeah.
you. It's great.
You can read an excerpt from Getting Mother's Body on the Bookworm page at kcrw.com. My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The technical director is Ray Guarna. Special production assistance from Alan Howard and Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. Archived editions of this and other Bookworm programs can be found online at kcrw.com, keyword bookworm. Cassette copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now with the book of the mouse, what time?
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.